Market Music with Fairbairn and Russell. Welcome to the Market Musing podcast with Fairbairn and Russell. Now, from one Australian gold project to another, but this time with the CEO being at home here in the UK. We'd like to welcome Craig Brown from ECR Minerals. Hello, Craig.
Hi, Mac and Kenny. How are you today?
We're very good, thank you. And how are you? Are you London-based? Are you in the heart of the city lockdown?
Not in the city. I'm in a suburb, not far from where I live. We've got an office, so it's quite a convenient location and keeps the cost down somewhat for the company. So it's quite a convenient place all around.
And what's it like then, sort of being stuck inside? And how are you coping?
Oh no, I seem to be coping fine, but it's just it's a bit more intense at this. Under such circumstances, and you've got to pick the phone up to call somebody. You haven't got them sitting opposite you in a room to be able to ask them a question straight away. So you've got a few more delays in getting responses. So I think everything takes a lot more time. I mean, you'll know that yourself, just simply going to get some groceries, you'll have a 100-meter queue and take you half an hour to get to the front of. And so it is a little bit more frustrating during this time. You just have to count on the fact you won't quite be as productive as you normally would.
Yeah, well, all we can do is try and make the most of it, isn't it? So has it affected ECR's day-to-day business in any sort of adverse way, or is the company still faring okay?
No, everything seems to be fine. Obviously, there's travel restrictions on Australia, so we can't travel out there at the moment. And even internally within Australia, there's certain travel restrictions, which, again, can be overcome so long as you're happy to do a 14-day
quarantine
afterwards, that's right. And that's even travelling from one state to another in Australia. Unfortunately, we have that difficulty at the moment. So you can imagine what it'd be like if you were living in one state and you had your work just across the border, a few miles away, and you couldn't travel to work each day.
No, that's not good. And you don't want to be having 14 days quarantine. You may as well stay at home with you.
yes.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah, Craig, so I'm just wanted to sort of dig further into your background. Obviously, I've known you for a couple of years, Craig, and I think it'd be good for listeners to hear about your sort of journey in your business career, and where you started out, and you went to university, and what you qualified as, and what projects you've worked on over the years. Don't know if you can just give us an insight.
Yes, that's great. Well, I was born in New Zealand. My grandparents on my mother's side came from Scotland, so
big tick.
They were British, and my father's side was Northern England around Leeds. His family were farmers, and he had some Scottish blood in them as well. And he was quite a few more generations out in New Zealand. And anyway, I was brought up in a mining town, actually a gold mining town, a Waihi gold mine. So it's on the map. Newmont previously owned the mine. It's quite a successful gold mine. It's been going since back, I think, was it the late 1800s? I mean, there was a large gold rush in New Zealand at that time as well. So I suppose I've got gold mining in my blood from where I come from. Anyway, I was brought up in a small town of about 4,000 people, and I moved to a big city thereafter. I finished high school, was qualified as a chartered accountant. And so that's kind of been my profession. I worked in public practice in New Zealand with various clients, and then after a few years, sold the business and then decided to travel. And my first main stop was, apart from a few trips when I was a kid to Australia, my main stop was coming to London. And when I came to London, within 10 days, I got offered a few jobs. And the job I took was for a mining company with mines in Central Asia. So that's what I started off on back in, that must have been 1995, January 95. And thereafter, mm-hmm. I've kind of never looked back. And I worked for that company for 6 years. And we took over a small Soviet-type mining operation, which wasn't profitable, and it only produced a concentrate. And we brought in new technology out of the US, out of Nevada, a company called Bateman Engineering, were our main technological consultants. We employed a lot of Brits as expats, and subsequently Australians and then South Africans. The main issue we had over there was that it was during the middle of a civil war. So unfortunately, the Foreign Office advised against all travel to the country, so it made things quite difficult. But it also gave us a lot of opportunities, because a few years later, when it came out of the Civil War, while I was still working for that company, we'd come across a number of other good gold deposits which were held in opposition territory, which nobody could get access to and weren't able to get their hands on. But I got married and I married a local girl, and she had good contacts and her family, and through the local people, etc., I managed to get hold of one of these mining licenses, and kind of never looked back. And then we listed the company. That was back in 2004, December 2004, listed it on the AIM market of the London Stock Exchange, and raised about, we had a market cap about £5.6 million. And we got it, after 50,000 meters of drilling, and about, must have been almost 6-7 years later, we had a mining license, a feasibility study completed, a 5 million ounce JORC resource. From nothing to JORC to 5 million ounces was pretty good. We had extra exploration territory, and a couple of years later, I left the company, and we were acquired by a group called China Non-Ferrous, and David Tang was the CEO of China Non-Ferrous, who's currently the chairman of ECR. So that's really how a lot of my contacts with China went on. So that was a true success story. The first company was a success story, and that mine's still in production today, and also owned by Chinese. And then there's been a couple of other since then. There was another company in between time which I helped out for a year or so, and they put a small mine in the north of the country into production, and they're producing about 30,000 ounces a year, still going. And they're 50% owned by Chinese, 50% by a Canadian group. And overall it's been a success, and I think there's about 15 producing mines in Tajikistan, and 12 of them are owned by Chinese. I mean, that country's really been invaded by the Chinese, but partly because they're a neighbour and they share a common border, so it's quite easy to transport goods across.
Yeah. So obviously that was the Pakarut Gold Project you were referring to, Craig?
Correct, yes, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've taken that from the sort of cradle to the grave almost, an early stage exploration right through to production.
Yeah, I put the first $100,000 in the company. I mean, shareholders made up to 20 times on their money by the time they got, apart from the shares they subscribed to with the warrants as well. So, I mean, we had people, putting in £50,000 and coming out with £1 million. And they're all pretty happy about that. It took about two or three years, but they're all pretty pleased about the types of returns we got in that company.
Yeah, I think most people would be pleased with that, wouldn't they? So,
yes.
What's the secret to what makes a good mine a good success story then?
Well, I think it's management. It's got to be management driven, and you've got to not work like a normal business. That you're not just working from 9 to 6 or 8 to 5. You're working 24/7, and the mine's got to be run 24/7, because you can't turn the plant off, especially when you've got all your chemicals sitting there. You can't afford them to sit in the bottom of your tanks. You've got to keep everything flowing through. And so to have everything running 24/7, you've got to have the trucks that working 24/7. You've got to have the power, and even seasonal stops. I mean, some mines only operate in the winter months or the summer months, but you really have to winterize the cooler weather, high altitude type operation, so you can operate all year round, because it's too much, start and go if you're not running the entire time. So you've got to make sure that the operations are continually going. And at the same time, the management has to be focused that way, so that the management who are running the company, they can't just sit there and say, I'm only going to work 9 to 6 and don't call me out of these hours. If you get a call at 1 o'clock in the morning and there's something's urgent happened and you need some supplies, or you need to, something's broken down, you need an engineer on site, you've got to make sure it's quickly organized, transport, accidents, whatever might happen. I mean, it's quite volatile. It's great when you're going well, but you always have unexpected things popping up, and you just got to make sure you cater for them. Flights don't come in on time, so some people don't get to work when they're meant to, and you've got to cover for those situations. But so long as you run it well, you'll sort things out. I mean, a lot of people get upset when they see the odd article coming out or news release that there's been an avalanche or there's been a problem on site or workers are on strike, but most of these things can organize. We always had good relations with the union, so we never had any problems with workers, and things went well. But you've just got to anticipate the potential hazards so that you can address them when they come along.
Good. I like that answer. It was a very good answer. I think it's very important, particularly in that sector, expectation management. Something that I've learned. You have to you have to be prepared for it, don't you? And because stuff does come along and sort of upset the preferred timeline for management and for investors. So it sounds like you certainly you understand that and can manage it well. So what brought you into ECR then, and just maybe a little bit about that story and what ECR are doing and how you're going to take that on?
Well, I stopped being the CEO of China Non Ferrous in 2013, and so then for a couple of years I was just a consultant employee. Was an employee actually, and but on the same salary and retainer when I was the CEO, and did half the work, so it was a lot easier. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of a couple of years, they decided they didn't need me so much, so they just made me a consultant, ended up doubling the amount they paid me. So that was quite convenient. And then, it was less regular work, so I had some time availability. And then Stephen Clayson, ECR, needed some assistance with finance. So that was at the beginning of 2016, which was a particularly tough market, but there was funding available out there. And I wasn't in favor of the debt financing type structure, but they already had a loan facility in place, so that ran on for a little bit longer. And I did organize funding prior to that, but it was quite a difficult market, and it was really only about mid to end 2016 that the market kind of came right. And I came on board as a director, and then I was mainly working on the finance side, but addressing a number of the other problems. And then the company hadn't done well, but the overall market had tumbled. I mean, it had dropped about 90% from 2013 to the end of 2016 or something. Mm. And so, it was, wasn't a great thing. I mean, I think it might be 99.9% even in some cases that, people put in £10,000 and they got £100 out at the end of the day. So it was a pretty disappointing result. But I mean, it was the market which was the problem. It wasn't, nobody was investing in mining stocks. So for some reason there was a bit of a decline. Maybe China wasn't going on such a spree at that time that acquired enough projects. But because they were the largest drag on the market before that they were actually, it was very difficult to obtain great projects while China was out there buying everything they could possibly get their hands on. And unfortunately, they weren't always looking at the economics of some of the projects which they took on. And so they were overpaying. And so it wasn't competitive for you to try and take those projects on. But as we can see now, that China's now the dominant player in the market, and they've monopolized a lot of the metal prices, especially since they've opened the Shanghai market. They control the copper price. So as a result of it, that they can regulate what the demand and supply for all these commodities are.
Yeah. All right, Craig. So before we come on to the projects and ECR, what's the strategy in ECR? Is it the same as the Packerout Gold project? Is it a discovery and take it on, or is it a discover it and sell it on? What is the strategy?
Well, I think in all cases, before you actually take on a mining project, as soon as you've got it firstly, you've got to make that discovery. But as soon as there's no point in actually starting to do the drilling and do the work and prove it up and do the feasibility study if you're not going to be able to, if it's not going to be a viable project on its own. A lot of people do take these projects on just on the idea that they can flog it off to someone else and make money that way. But realistically, you've got to look at what the economics of the project are like, so that potentially you can finance it through conventional debt financing methods. And if there isn't a golden handshake and some buyer coming along, you can turn around and develop the project and put it into production. And if it's got those type of that economic prosperity, then you'll always find a buyer for the project anyway. So it's really a matter of choosing the right project and not being too speculative with what you take on.
Yeah. So obviously, you guys have set down a quite a big footprint in Victoria. Now, I know you've got about five projects on the go in Victoria, but most of the focus seems to be on Bayliston and Creswick. I wonder if you could just give a brief overview of both projects for our listeners that are maybe not aware of ECR Minerals.
Yes, but the main reason is we've got five projects with a total of six exploration licenses and five applications. The reason that we've the reason that we focused mainly on the Bayliston and the Blue Moon prospect in particular, and also down there at Creswick, is that they've got the size potential. I mean, there's quite a lot of things around where you've got high grade sitting on surface, or, you know, narrow veins, but they might only be running at, you know, they might be running at 15 to 20, 30 grams per ton. But the problem is you haven't got the volume. I mean, that's quite a small scale, and you've got quite a lot of health and safety issues, and you can't really dig it up as an open pit. And so you're not really running trucks, you're more running excavators in one truck. So we have more focus on something which is a bit bigger scale, which you can put a plant with. And, you know, we're talking about wanting to get, I don't know, and the economics say anything over about 100,000 ounces is economic in Australia. But, you know, if you're mining little areas, which are like 20, 30, 40,000 ounces at in each particular place, it's not as economic as if you've got 1 million ounces sitting in one location, or, you know, 3 or 4 million ounces.
Yeah, and obviously Bayliston and Creswick are in close proximity to producing mines. I think Creswick is Ballarat and Bayliston is Fosterville. Yeah.
Yes, that's right. And there's a huge interest in the Fosterville area at the moment. I mean, it's just gone crazy up there. And, you know, we've got Newmont, we've got this Kalamazoo, we've got...
I noticed Novo seem to be muscling in as well. They've done a couple of deals recently in the area.
Okay, well, it just seems there's just one after another. Mawson is another Canadian company which is up there. So it just seems like one after the other. Kirkland Lake Gold, of course, is the owner of the Fosterville mine. But, I mean, it's just... The reason that Fosterville is so successful is it's just so profitable, and it's partly because of the grade. I mean, they have an average grade running through that plant or something like about over 30 grams a ton. I mean, it was like 40-odd grams. We were out at the PDAC and talking to the guys there, and they're saying they're out there, they're in Canada talking to Eric Sprott, which is one of the largest mining investors in Canada, and he runs a company called Sprott Securities. And, you know, they're telling us that, you know, Eric Sprott's saying, oh, well, do you think, How big do you think this really is? And he goes, oh, well, I'm not saying how big this is going to be. This is, but he says, I'm saying how many more have we got all sitting around the area? And so that's what everybody's thinking about, that, you know, you haven't just got this one structure running down. You've got loads of structures across there. And so that's what we really want to be focused on. And, you know, that's what we think we found at Blue Moon and Creswick.
Cool. Yeah. I actually seen that, the video you done at PDAC. You were... It looked like you just won $1 million in the casino. You were very excited. So you were.
Well, I don't normally play in casinos, Kenny. But it was just good news and good meetings the whole time. I mean, you know, and the amount of interest, the amount of companies which are talking to us and doing due diligence at the moment. Unfortunately, because of the travel restrictions, it's taking a bit longer than we would have normally liked. But things are going very well.
Good stuff.
So where are you then, or where is ECR, Craig, in the process of discovery and exploration?
We've already made discoveries. Made discoveries at a number of prospects, but we're still on the exploration to actually quantify that discovery. So that's where we're at the moment,
Right, so it's doing more exploration to work out exactly what this is that we've found and how big it is and what it could be worth.
Correct. Yes. So we've made the discovery. It's quantifying it, and then you know, putting the economics into it. But I mean, the economics are partially determined by grades, and the grades are good, and also by the metallurgy. But you know, a lot of it's the same type of mineralization down there. In actual fact, like the Fosterville mineralization is quite difficult to process, and they have quite an advanced plant. But it's just incredible the technical expertise which they have down there on site, and you know, how well they've actually done.
Sounds to me like you're in a real heartland, you know, the right place to be, and look forward to seeing these are the results when they come out. It sounds exciting, but how do you feel, you know, being the head of the company, and you've had a history in exploration companies, and you know, you're heading up a company that potentially is in the heart of a fantastic area. How does that feel to you?
It's great. I mean, you know, I get a real thrill each day getting up and going to work, and I'm just enthusiastic about it the whole time and busy the whole time. So it's great. You know, it's great being out there in Australia. I mean, in Australia, you can be like in a large capital and a sophisticated first world country, and you just drive a few hours out and in the middle of the countryside with the flies, the snakes, the, you know, it's completely, they've got these ants which crawl all over you, and they just, you know, it's just incredible how quickly the environment changes.
Good stuff. You've also got a nice footprint in Western Australia as well, Craig, the Wendida project. Can you give a brief overview of that, please?
Yes. Well, Wendida is prospective. It was introduced by Sam Garrett, who was on the board for a while, and you know, he thinks he thought there's quite a lot of upside in it, and we've got a geophysicist reviewing it and compiling some more information. We had one geophysical report which came out recently, and you know, there's just a lot more work which needs to be going on. It's a lot more early stage. I mean, you know, there's been a lot of nickel found in the area and a lot of gold a bit further down, a few hundred kilometers further down, but not specifically in our areas. It's mainly nickel, which they've found in the past, lead, zinc, nickel. So it's a bit different, but it's in the greenstone belts, and predominantly the greenstone belts do contain gold, especially when you've got a gravity or a electromagnetic anomaly connected with it. And so a geophysicist is doing the work.
Excellent. Okay, with your accountant head on, Craig, I'm going to pick your brains on these tax losses that ECR have been carrying for a while. Can you just briefly remind us what they are and what's the potential of these tax losses, if anything?
Oh, there's $66 million worth of tax losses, so yeah. Australian dollars. And so, you know, what are they worth? Corporate tax rate in Australia. So, you know, talk about, say, 13, 14 million Australian dollars. But, you know, you actually have to have a business in there which is going to churn out those tax losses. So, you know, it's just a matter of getting the right project and then, you know, being in that position to utilise them.
Yeah, and how long do these tax losses actually sort of stay valid for, Craig, just out of curiosity?
In Australia, they've got slightly different rules. And in a number of countries, the tax losses disappear after 5 or 7 years or whatever it is. But in Australia, there's no period that they disappear. It's just really a matter of change of ownership of the company or the change of the business. And arguably, the business is still gold mining or gold exploration. And so it's exactly the same business as when the losses were incurred. And so far, we pass all the shareholder tests, and it's only one of those two tests which needs to be upheld. But we're upholding both of them at the moment, so everything's perfectly fine.
So there is some value in these tax losses.
Correct. Yes, there is.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, because they've been around for a while, haven't they? I mean, ECR Minerals was one. It was my first ever mining stock that I bought, and I remember. I mean, that was 2016. And yeah, we were talking about the tax losses then. But actually, what you're saying is, as soon as you can get a viable business going in Australia, which it's hopefully you're on track, and you certainly sound like you know what you're doing when it comes to delivering that, that can be utilised. Finally, they can actually be put to some good use, which is
yes, that's correct.
Good,
yes.
Good to hear. Yeah, it's a different beast completely to what it was, you know, when I first invested, and it certainly sounds like you're in the right place. And yeah, I will be. I'll be very excited and interested to see how it develops. So thank you for coming on. And unless, Kenny, do you have any more questions, or are you good?
Yeah, I'm all good. Yep, I appreciate your time, Craig. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Craig. Okay, thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to another podcast from Market Musings with Fairbairn and Russell. Join us next time when we'll have Matt Bull from Armadale Capital on the podcast. Until then, stay safe.